This is Fresh Air.
Sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. Everything that's wonderful is what I feel when we're together. Brighter than a lucky penny. When you're near, the rain goes, disappears, dear, and I feel so fine just to know that you are mine. My life is sunshine.
We're going to remember singer Leslie Gore, who died Monday at the age of 68. Born Leslie Sue Goldstein in Brooklyn, she started singing as a teenager and had several hits before she was 18. She stayed in school, though, and got her degree in American Literature from Sarah Lawrence College. After her teen hit years, Leslie Gore began writing songs and performed in musical theater, television, and eventually in concerts on the nostalgia circuit. And she kept recording music. Her last album, Ever Since, was released in 2005, the year she came out as a lesbian. Before she died of lung cancer, she was working on a memoir and a Broadway show based on her life. Everyone who listened to Top 40 radio in the 60s knew Leslie Gore's hits. Judy's Turn to Cry, She's a Fool, You Don't Own Me, That's the Way Boys Are, and, of course, her first hit, It's My Party, which was produced by Quincy Jones. It was one of the big pop records he produced long before the Michael Jackson days. We'll hear Terry's interview with Leslie Gore in a couple of minutes, but first, let's hear the story of how her first hit came about. This is from Terry's 2001 interview with producer Quincy Jones.
During that time, I was recording all the divas and, you know, Nina Simone and Sarah Vaughan and Shirley Horn, Dinah Washington, and we were doing things with Robert Farn, big string, expensive dates and so forth. And they were beautiful musical albums. But Irving said to me one time, he says, you know, all the pop guys are saying you and Hal Mooney, who are the arrangers, are budget busters because you do all this big music. But we need some more help with the bottom line, with hit records. And I was a little presumptuous and said, well, I don't think it's such a big deal to make a pop hit. And he says, well, why don't you start making something then? And we were at a meeting at the Oxford House where we had our A&R meetings regularly in Chicago. And he said, here's a tape that Joe Glazer sent me, and his friend, a fight manager, somebody, has a niece that sang something. Just say you listen to it and we'll send it back, you know. I grabbed it, and I said I'd like to try this because she had a great sound as far as a rock singer in those days. She could sing really in tune. She was 16 years old. And we went back to New York and talked to Joe Glazer, and he said, make her a star, and, you know, all of that Hollywood stuff. And we went in on a Saturday and we recorded two songs, It's My Party, and with a B-side written by Paul Anka, young Paul Anka, called Danny. And on the way to Carnegie Hall, I saw Phil Spector. Phil Spector said, I just cut a smash, man, with the Crystals. Called This My Party. I said, what? I had never experienced that kind of competition before. I went back to the studio with the engineer, and we mastered 100 acetates to send out to the radio. And the rest, you know, I had to go to Japan right after that. And I told Leslie, we've got the great record and everything. All we need to do is fix that name, because I don't think this name is going to work with a pop record, you know. So
you didn't like the name Gore?
No, I didn't like it.
I won't tell Al Gore about that.
And so I went to Japan to do a television show, and we did a little acting and scoring it. And so I got a call from Irving Green later, and he said, did anybody call you yet? I said, no. I said, did she get that name together yet? Did she come up with any suggestions? And she said, the record's number one. Do you really care? I said, no.
Whatever happened to the Crystals recording of It's My Party that Phil Spector was producing?
I don't think it came out. I don't think it came out. Leslie's thing had such impact. I don't know. I may be wrong, but I don't think it came out.
That's Quincy Jones speaking with Terry Gross in 2001. Before we hear Terry's 1991 interview with Leslie Gore, here's that number one hit.
In Ms. Magazine, there was recently a piece with you and K.D. Lang having a conversation with each other.
Yes.
And you said that when you were a kid, you'd sing in front of the mirror and you'd slick back your hair like Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
But when you finally walked out on stage in the spring of 1963, you went dressed like a nice little girl and performed as you were expected to.
Mm-hmm.
Can you compare what you wanted to look like when you started to performing with how you ended up looking?
Well, you know, I still basically have a very, I'm very sound-oriented. Image, which has become a major part of our business, is not what I would call my primary interest. So what it was really was sort of this, and you can probably relate, let's say you had a party to go to, and I might compare it to having the Ed Sullivan Show to do. I would say to my mother or my cousin, what do you think I should wear? And we would, you know, then go shopping for something we thought was appropriate. Because the only influence on my life at that time was my mother, I very often walked out looking sort of like my mini mother. you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I didn't have anyone saying to me, just put on a pair of jeans and a white shirt, which probably would have felt comfortable to me at the time, but I probably would have had a problem with it, because I did believe you get up on stage and you dress up because there are lots of people there and it's important, and you want to show yourself off to your best advantage. I'm a little bit more savvy now in terms of image, but at 16, you don't necessarily have a clear-cut image of yourself.
Well, if you're going shopping with your mother for performances, you're not going to end up looking like the Ronettes.
Exactly, exactly.
So what do you remember of that first recording session when you made It's My Party?
Hmm. Well, the first thing I remember, which is so different from today, is we recorded 4-track. This meant that we had 2 microphones basically hanging in the studio, strategically placed over the band. We had a 3rd microphone in the center of all of the background singers, and there were about 8 of them, and then I was in a little booth, and that was the 4th mic. So that was pretty much the setup. When we counted off, you heard everything that was going to be there. Today we layer a lot and we track a lot. Then you just went in and did it. When you walked out of the studio, you were pretty well mixed and knew exactly what everything sounded like.
We're listening back to an interview with singer Leslie Gore, who died on Monday. She was on Fresh Air in 1991 during a run at the Rainbow and Stars nightclub. Her cabaret act included Gershwin, Porter, and also some of the top 40 songs that made her famous, including this one, a song that made Gore, as the New Yorker put it, pop music's original teen feminist.
At the time, I know I chose it because I liked the strength in the lyric. But for me, it was not a song about being a woman. It was a song about being a person and what was involved with that. Of course, it got picked up as an anthem for women, which makes me very proud. And today, when I sing that song, I don't know, maybe it's after the Anita Hill hearings and a number of other things that have seem to be happening in our world, You Don't Own Me takes on a whole other set of meanings for me now.
Yeah, I know a lot of people have come to see it as a proto-feminist anthem.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't think of it that way when you were recording it?
I didn't. What I was impressed with was the strength. I've always hated wimpy woman. I've never understood it. So when I first heard this piece of material, I knew it was one I wanted to do.
Let me play something that's from the 60s, from an album called My Town, My Guy and Me. And this is a standard. This is a Julie Stein, Sammy Kahn song called The Things We Did Last Summer. Was it your idea to do a standard on this? I want to show a different side of your singing.
Probably. You know, the very first album that Quincy and I did together, we had to base it on It's My Party, but we had to throw it together quite quickly, and it was called I'll Cry If I Want To, and it was all cry songs. It was Cry Me a River. It was the Johnny Ray's cry. So we had established a premise early on, whereby I would do standards, maybe with just a slight rock and roll edge. But by and large, I don't think of The Things We Did Last Summer as a rock piece. We did it, I think, just because I loved the song. I believe Don Costa did the arrangement, and a superlative one.
Okay, let's hear it. I think we'll hear a different side of your singing.
Sure.
The boat rides we would take, the moonlight on the lake, the way we danced and hummed our favorite song. The things we did last summer, I'll remember all winter long. The midway and the fun, the Cupid dolls we won, the bell you rang to prove that you were strong. The things we did last summer, I'll remember all winter long. The early morning hike and the rented tandem bike, the lunches that we
Leslie Gore, do you know what's become of Susan Michaels, who was the president of the Leslie Gore fan club?
Yes, I do. Susan Michaels was an amalgam of my middle name, which is Sue, and my brother's first name, which is Michael. And it was actually my grandma, my Nana, who is no longer with us, who became Susan Michaels and would try to answer all the fan mail personally and handwritten. And that's who Susan Michaels is.
Oh, that's great. Well, Leslie Gore, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. I enjoyed it.
The things we did last summer,
Leslie Gore spoke with Terry Gross in 1991. She died Monday at the age of 68.